God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. And because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I'm Todd Herman. When I worked in Washington, D.C., as the chief digital strategist of the RNC, back when I was Republican, I'm not a Republican anymore, I am a Christian conservative populist. What does that mean? Well, we can talk about that later, but that's who I am now. It's how I identify politically. But when I worked in Washington, D.C., one of the things I told my young staff was everything you say to everybody is being recorded. There is never a time when you can think that you're not being surveilled. Now, this wasn't about the deep state at the time. This was about people trying to nail you. And of course, it's Washington, D.C., and of course, politics to many people there is a blood sport. And it's sport. It's fun for them. A woman who is a filmmaker, liberal filmmaker, her name is Lauren Windsor, decided to go surreptitiously record some of the Supreme Court justices. And it's newsworthy, so we'll play it. Now, this should be banned from Twitter, by the way, unless Elon Musk has changed the rules. Maybe he has, because it had been that surreptitiously recorded audio was banned. Well, I mean, I should say, if it was recorded by a conservative. Now, if it was recorded by a conservative, it could be taken off the platform. I think Elon's changed that. So two Supreme Court justices recorded without their knowledge. And this is some of the conversation that occurred. Again, a liberal filmmaker, Lauren Windsor, with this. This is Chief Justice Roberts.
Well, I guess I believe that the founders were godly, like, we're Christians. And Lord. I think that we live in a Christian nation. And that our Supreme Court should be guiding us true. In that path.
Yeah, I don't know that we live in a Christian nation. I know a lot of Jewish and Muslim friends who would say maybe not. And it's not our job to do that. It's our job to decide the cases as best we can.
And that's true. There are Christians and Muslims who live here. And the nation was founded as a Christian nation. Our founders believed in and followed the Lord Jesus Christ. And our system of governance is informed by many, many things, but core to them is the Bible. When the Lord described a governing method, he described distributed powers. Moses tried the thing where he was the one guy, and then his father-in-law, inspired by God, came along and said, Moses, you can't do this. You need to establish these other offices. The Lord Jesus, when he set up his church, the church has elders, it has pastors, it had prophets, teachers, it has a congregation. Any well-run Christian church has checks and balances, distributed. Same way that our Constitution distributes powers so that you do not have a human dictator. So this statement from Chief Justice Roberts can't be made controversial, except that's what the left has to do. Now, see, this all is happening. This work by Lauren Windsor is all happening at a time where every Democrat is once again attempting to destroy the Supreme Court. They are pretending that Congress has the right to regulate the Supreme Court. Congress, these leftists on Congress in the Congress are attempting to pretend that they have the ethical high ground because some Supreme Court justices have taken gifts of trips. It's Congress that has a $7 million slush fund to pay off victims of sexual assault and sexual harassment. It's Congress where people inside trade, they walk in having a net worth of a couple $100,000 and 2 to 3 terms later, they've got a net worth of $100 million. And everybody knows how that happens. On the topic of polarization, Justice Alito spoke about one side or the other winning.
I don't know that we can negotiate with the left in the way that, like, needs to happen for the polarization to like winning.
I think you're probably right. One side or the other. One side or the other is going to win. I don't know. I mean, there can be a way of living together peacefully, but it's difficult, you know, because there are differences on fundamental things that really can't be compromised. So it's not like we're going to split the difference.
So this has been made into controversy. The Mockingbird media is doing everything they can to turn that into controversy. They're saying things like Justice Alito admits he has no, he admits his bias, that he has no neutrality when it comes to the left. It's hilarious, except, of course, it goes to the method that the left is using to try to destroy the Supreme Court. Why? Because they want to pack it. Because it's the one institution they haven't yet fully captured. So they have to destroy it. They would rather rule over the ashes, burn it all down and rule over the ashes. And I saw a Fox News report in Seattle as I was doing research for the show. And they're presenting this at the same time as they're saying, well, Justice Alito allowed an upside down flag to fly outside his house. An upside-down American flag, which is usually a sign of distress, and he did this at the time that the January 6 events was going on. No. He did it during the discussion over Jan 6 and over his neighbors attacking his wife verbally, cursing at her verbally because of who she is. He put the flag up upside down or allowed it to be there because he believes the nation is in distress. Do you disagree? Justice Alito, talking with this liberal filmmaker, Windsor, she told Alito she believes the solution is winning the moral argument. And here's that discussion.
I think that the solution really is, like, winning the moral argument. Like, people in this country who believe in God have got to keep fighting for that to return our country to a place of godliness.
Oh, I agree with you. So
she's playing a role. She's acting. I don't think Lauren Windsor believes that we should be a godly country. And it's lying. So she's representing herself as something she's not. And so does James O'Keefe. I mean, let's be fair. Project Veritas does this all the time. We can't sit and appreciate the work of James O'Keefe and then criticize Lauren Windsor for pretending to be something she's not. That's the headline. And it's in scare quotes. Justice Samuel Alito says the nation should be godly. Well, what's the alternative? If you believe in God, what exactly is the alternative to a godly nation? Oh, we'll be a secular nation. Okay, so satanic. No, secular, right, satanic. Well, no, I'm saying, yes, oh, this is a conversation that I've had multiple times with people. No, understand something. I'm a Christian. I just want to have a secular government. Okay, so satanic. No, secular. Here's the design. In the church of the Lord Jesus, elders are described as men who are above reproach, who have governed their homes well, who have raised their kids well, who do not engage in drunkenness, who show self-control and kindness and the ability to seek to serve rather than be served, a life of service. That's how they're described. Now, you could say that's an ideal, but when you're a nation of 300 million people, 150 million of whom roughly are male, 30 million of them, or 40 million, reach the age standard to be a Supreme Court justice or a member of Congress, you should be able to find people of that nature. They would be godly people. A government is either a series of pieces of paper or the people who enforce the words on the pieces of paper. If it's the latter, a government run by people, not by AI, then the people make up the godliness. Now, in our nation, we have decided that women can hold office, thank God. as they should be allowed to do. That means godly women. There's descriptions of that, too, in the Bible. Now, should they get into office and force the Christian faith upon people? No, because then they're not Christian. It cannot be construed to be a Christian thing to force people to convert or to pretend to convert. How can I say that? Because the Lord Jesus himself never did it. He never forced anybody to do anything. Now, there will be a day where every knee bows and every tongue confesses. That day is coming. We don't know when, but it's coming. At that point, it won't be that people are forced. It will be that people see and realize, oh, dear Lord. Seeing the face of God tends to do that to people. In 2023, Justice Alito told Lorne Windsor that the media has eroded trust in the courts, and everyday Americans need to try to heal this polarization.
Like, this is like the last bastion of, I think, like, public trust. And, like, how do we get back to that?
I wish I knew. I don't know. It's easy to blame the media, but I do blame them, because they do nothing but criticize us. And so they have really eroded trust in the court. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, ordinary people, ordinary isn't the right word. American citizens in general need to work on this to try to heal this polarization, because it's very dangerous. I do believe it's very dangerous.
And I agree with Alito's earlier statement that there really isn't a way to get along with the hard left. Now, we need to love them and pray for them, because God says we have to. We need to try to do that with joyful hearts. But the moderates, the people who are leaning on the fence, the sole approach to reach them, the one and only, is truth wrapped in grace and speaking through the lens of caring and fairness. That's the only things they care about. Every issue we discuss must be discussed using the lenses of caring and fairness. That's the only way to win them. Being secretly courted also in 2023, Justice Alito admitted it's hard to identify the leaker of the Dobbs decision.
But you guys haven't been able to find, like, the leaker?
Pardon?
The leaker, like the... Exactly. Are you guys being able to figure that out?
It's hard. You know, you can't name somebody unless you know for sure. And we don't have the power to do the things that would be necessary to try to figure out, to nail down exactly who did it. That's the problem. And even then, we might not be able to do it. But we don't have the power to subpoena people to testify, to subpoena records, phone records or other things like that. We don't have that authority, so...
It just seems crazy that you can't, because it's so detrimental to the trust the public places in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, well, we're not a law enforcement agency.
What I hear in Justice Alito makes me feel happy. I was going to use the word proud, but I really try to not feel proud. I feel great, great satisfaction. Because Justice Alito saying in what he may have thought and probably did think was a private conversation admits the limits on power of the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, people like Eric Swalwell and every single leftist Democrat is pretending Congress has the power to place ethics rules upon the Supreme Court, a Congress which is, well, anything but ethical. We'll come back on A Disciple's View to talk about a culture of coveting, the WNBA. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Coming up, I respond to an email. A woman named Julie, writing from Orlando, Florida, I don't know that she was offended. I made a comment about a conversation I had with a woman while I was in Mexico, and she is concerned for me, feels I need to confess to my pastor and my wife. And so we'll get to that. It's the next segment. Julie, very loving note, by the way. I don't take offense at this at all. This is something we do in communities of Christ, as we hold each other to account. So we'll get to that, plus the Tower Babbling. The WNBA does not really understand what it would be to have success. And they're in the news because you've probably seen this clip of a basketball player at the WNBA deciding to knock Caitlin Clark to the floor. This wasn't even during play. It was during the just before play began, and you've probably seen this. Angela Reese decided to shoulder Caitlin Clark while they were setting up for a play pretty aggressively. Now, Caitlin Clark might have flopped. This is something that's done in the NBA. I assume it's done in the WNBA. Caitlin Clark came out of college a phenom and perhaps one of the best college basketball players as a woman in history. This is shown through performance. She's already a standout in the WNBA league, scoring a bunch of points and rebounds, etc. Now, I wouldn't know this because I don't watch the WNBA ever. It's funny because I got tickets to one of the first WNBA games. There's a woman I used to work with in Seattle, or in Redmond, in Microsoft, who was one of the first original owners of the team when they were starting the WNBA franchise. And I got 3 free tickets to go watch one of the premier, if not the first maybe, but one of the first games of the WNBA in Seattle. And I was sort of excited because my daughter was doing a lot of sports at the time. Not a lot. She was doing a specific sport, but a lot of it, speed skating. And this is, I think my daughter was about 10 or 11 when this happened. So I said, hey, I've got courtside tickets sitting right on the floor, so we'll be right next to the players for the WNBA. This is the Female Professional Basketball League. I have 3 tickets. Why don't you and I go, and you pick one of your friends, maybe one of your speed skating friends who likes sports. So she got super excited. This is great. And I went to the website to learn about the WNBA because I didn't know anything about them. We were supposed to wear pink to the game because the game was an abortion fundraiser for Planned Parenthood. This was at the very, very beginning of the league. Now, I knew this woman at Microsoft to be very liberal. She's since learned I'm conservative and therefore doesn't want to talk to me at all. Heartbreaking, but okay. I knew she was liberal. I knew that she was same-sex attracted. That never mattered to me because we were business partners at Microsoft. We weren't close friends. It matters to me now because as a discipled Christian, I need to pray for her. I need to recognize that she is divorcing herself from God and that has dire eternal consequences. I didn't think that way then. So having learned this about the WNBA, I had to go back to my daughter and say, hey, honey, I'm sorry, we can't go to the game. Let me show you something. And I showed her the website for the WNBA, and it was for Planned Parenthood and abortion. She looked at me, she said, why? Why? Why would they do that? Should we in speed skating start doing this? Why are they doing this? Why don't they just play basketball? I said, I don't know. I do know now. They simply are blind. The Lord Jesus upon the cross, in a perfect statement of mercy and grace, said about the people who had nailed him to this cross, to that cross, who were killing him, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. I firmly believe that the women who run the WNBA and the people who run it know not what they do. They didn't know then. They didn't know now. And so now they're faced with this Caitlin Clark incident where Angela Reese decided to knock her down. And there's so much to talk about in relation to the WNBA. One of them is Joy Reid. Joy Reid, of course, is on MSNBC, and Joy Reid has an interesting point of view about the WNBA and Caitlin Clark. She thinks that this is the problem for the WNBA. They're trying to solve because it's a racial issue. She's the term, it's racism. Jerry Reed had Jemele Hill on her program.
You know, somebody very smart said to me recently that the challenge with women's basketball is that most of the stars are black, but most of the great players are black, but most of the stars are white, whether it's who's getting awarded by the ESPN, whether who's getting noticed by the magazines. And like you said, if there were charter flights, Brittany Griner would not have ended up in a gulag, right?
Brittany Griner is a black WNBA player who decided to take drugs onto an airplane. And that airplane went through Russia and she was put in prison or jail and then gotten out. Well, another person was allowed to rot behind jail in Russia. She got out because the State Department put pressure on them. Joy Reid making a statement that most of the notice players are white in the WNBA goes to my core point about the WNBA not really understanding what it is to succeed. They're a grievance factory. She continues.
These ladies are flying commercial and they're not treated as like the men are. How much of this do you think, though, is the marketing potential of a Caitlin Clark? Because quite frankly, this is a league that is largely, as you said, largely black women. It's also largely LGBTQ. She's a white heterosexual woman. And so if you're trying to get white dads to go spend their money and buy season tickets, she seems like a marketing opportunity.
Let's think about this. Joy Reid's assertion here is that white dads won't take their kids to watch black people play sports. The NBA is mostly black players. The NFL is mostly black players. White dads take their kids there all the time. See, they know not what they do. Jemele Hill.
I don't know why people find that to be controversial to think about that. I mean, we know that marketing is about ability, talent, all those things.
And it's not. No, it's not. Marketing is about creating a need or a perceived need for a product. It's about creating likability. The fact that Caitlin Clark is capable of playing basketball could be marketed, but no, marketing is not that.
Nobody's saying that Caitlin Clark doesn't have those things. It's like she's incredibly talented. She's broken record. She's playing a playing style that people love that is very representative of what we see today, particularly on the men's side. But yes, it helps that she's white, straight, and from Iowa.
It helps that she's white, straight, and from Iowa because white dads won't take their kids to watch black people play games. No, when the WNBA announced itself as a league, they did it by saying, we're here to promote abortion. And a lot of people like me said, oh, okay, you're not for me. There's no reason for me to ever go to one of your games. And I've kept true to that. I've never gone to a WNBA game. They don't want to succeed. They're basing their league upon a grievance. You just don't like us because it's obvious you're not spending the money. But here's some must be a reason. Must be because we're same-sex attracted. Must be because we're black. In fact, maybe the product is substandard. Maybe there's something else. This is an interview with a WNBA player. Does anyone see a challenge?
I was saying that the bench didn't give a lot of production today in this game here. What do they got to do to help you all out as what they did in the previous game?
What they got
to
do? What they do last game? That's a real question? You for real?
No, what I'm asking is just really trying to get an idea of what they need to do.
So what the bench do the last game?
They actually play well.
So what they do this game?
Today they didn't do well this game.
Okay, so what they got to do?
Score.
Right?
Yep.
All right, bet. That's it, right?
Yep.
Wow. Need interaction with the press. That makes me want to spend time watching you play basketball because you're absolutely horribly rude to a man who's simply doing his job, asking a very simple question. The answer could have been they need to score more often. They need to play dinner defense. They need to come off the bench ready to play. Here's some things that I would suggest, but no, it's a temper tantrum. The WNBA has set itself up as a league of grievance, a league that identifies as grievance. A league that identifies as, well, coveting. There's this constant refrain, Joy Reid did it. These women are not flying in private jets. The men in NBA basketball are. Yes, they are. And the league, the NBA, and I don't watch NBA basketball. There's too much thuggery involved. The NBA is wildly financially successful. Do you think that the people who run the WNBA don't want this financial success? They just can't find a way to get there because they can't get out of the way of the grievance. This is even now that the NBA is attempting to help the WNBA out. So Angela Reese, who
who decided to knock Caitlin Clark down, she went and did an interview, and let's hear what she has to say.
It all started from the national championship game, and I've been dealing with this for 2 years now. And understanding, like, yeah, negative things have probably been said about me, but honestly, I'll take that because look where women's basketball is. People are talking about women's basketball that you never would think that we'd be talking about women's basketball. People are pulling up to games. We got celebrities coming to games, sold out arenas, like, just because of one single game. And just looking at that, like, I'll take that role. I'll take the bad guy role, and I'll continue to take that on and be that for my teammates. And if I want to be that, and I know I'll go down in history, I'll look back in 20 years and be like, yeah, the reason why we watching women's basketball is not just because of one person. It's because of me, too, and I want y'all to realize that.
Angela Reese isn't a major performer in the WNBA. I just looked at her statistics. So she knocked a girl down, a woman down, in a silly, stupid way. An obvious way, and she's willing to take this on because this is how you help women's basketball. No, this is a fascination factor. And people are showing up to see Caitlin Clark. In fact, you can prove that because people are chanting, we want Caitlin. Now, Caitlin Clark's not on the Olympic team. Isn't that fascinating? Joe Reed had said most of the star players are white, even though they're not the best players. Caitlin Clark's not on the Olympic team. As I'm looking at this, this is all black women on the Olympic team, including Brittany Griner. Brittany Griner, who decided to take drugs onto an airplane and then was stunned when those drugs on an airplane in Russia landed her in a Russian jail. Caitlin Clark had a different approach to this, a different approach to the whole affair.
What was your level of disappointment not having hearing your name on the roster?
Honestly, no disappointment. Like, I think it just gives you something to work for. You know, that's a dream. You know, hopefully one day I can be there. And I think it's just a little more motivation. You remember that. And, you know, hopefully in 4 years, when 4 years comes back around, you know, I can be there.
So Caitlin Clark takes an entirely different approach to being snubbed. And if you do a side-by-side comparison of the first interview I played for you, or after the Joy Reid commentary, you can do a contrast and compare on your own. The WNBA identifies as a sex league. You are to affirm that same-sex attraction and acting on it is good, is to be celebrated, it's to be applauded, it's to be replicated. They're a league based upon abortion. It's to be celebrated, accepted, affirmed, and praised. They're a league that's spoken out about reparations. It's to be celebrated, affirmed, wanted, and begged for. It's a league based upon grievance. We don't have what the men do. It must be because we're women or because we're same-sex attracted. It can't be because the game is not as good to watch. It can't be because we've not been around as long. It can't be because there hasn't been a legitimate female star yet. There is no female Michael Jordan. Maybe Caitlin Clark's that. Wait a minute, Caitlin Clark? Well, we can't have her on the Olympic team. She's white and straight and new. The WNBA is a grievance league. Grievance is the fastest way to ruin. And gratitude is the fastest way to avoid it. I was talking with a person in Mexico. And we were talking about challenges in life. And he was sharing with me the hardest lesson he's had to learn. He's a podcast family member, and he and I had a very intimate conversation over a dinner with a few of us in attendance. What he said to me was his daughter, when she was 4 years old, they were in an intersection in Los Angeles and they got T-boned. Smack. And it put his little baby, four-year-old daughter, into a coma for a couple of weeks. When she came out of that, her memory had been wiped. She didn't remember mom or dad. She didn't remember her name. She didn't remember her favorite books. Her learning had been erased. She could speak, but she couldn't any longer recognize words. At four, she had some words. She'd been a decent reader at four. So they recovered from that, tried to make the learning back, tried to make it up. Then, at the age of 12, she had a brain tumor. And the brain tumor had to be attacked aggressively. and it wiped her memory again. Again, she had to start over. Again, she had to relearn who loved her. She's in her 30s. She's learning to read again and to write. I met her, and I was immediately struck by something. Utter optimism. She's a happy warrior. She's joyfully pursuing learning to read again. She openly admits it. And she's smart. She also is not afraid to celebrate. On that boat, I'm going to talk about, respond to this email from Julie from Orlando, Florida. Same boat where I had this conversation with this woman. That same woman sat next to this younger woman. And they sang Journey songs together and other 80s rock songs. Just lost in each other's company. Optimism. What this father shared with me is he finally understood what Apostle Paul meant when he said, be grateful under all circumstances. He told me it is his gratitude for the Lord keeping his daughter alive and giving her the desire to excel. It's the gratitude that's kept him grounded. We'll come back on A Disciple's View. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Coming up, response to an email I got yesterday. I mentioned during this event I was at in Mexico, getting to meet with what I call podcast family members. I consider you part of the radio family, for me, my radio family, and opportunity to get to know people. I had a conversation with a lady on a boat. It's not really a cruise boat. It's a great big catamaran. And I got a note about this, and a lady took offense. So I'll explain. That's a note from Julie in Florida. I want to address it head on. So we'll get to that as we wrap up this last segment of the program. Stephen Miller is the commentator, political thinker, a pretty foul-mouthed guy, very intelligent man. I'm just warning you, if you look up his work, he has an affection for the F word and other sort of curse words. And I don't know why, but he does. He used to write at National Review, other places, super, super good at Twitter, keen, smart eye, good politically. He noticed something about an ad that is supposedly attacking President Trump. This is what Stephen Miller wrote. I can't imagine an ad that misses Trump's appeal more.
On camera laughing about President Trump.
Several world leaders mocking President Trump.
They're laughing at him.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
World leaders mocking and ridiculing him for being completely off balance.
Allies are deeply worried about it. They say he's becoming increasingly isolated. Something is very wrong.
The world sees Trump for what he is, insincere, ill-informed, corrupt, dangerously incompetent, and incapable, in my view, of world leadership. And if we give Donald Trump four more years, we'll have a great deal of difficulty if ever being able to recover America's standing in the world and our capacity to bring nations together.
The fact is this, that I don't believe that people any longer think that world leaders laugh at Trump. I think that they recognize that Donald Trump is not someone they can own or control. And that was the promise. That was it from the very beginning. Trump is unbuyable. He's unmovable. He's unpredictable. See, that's the appeal for so many people. That the fact is that when your enemies are afraid of you, well, that's good, right? A lot of us look at world bosses who all seem to have the same desires, like shutting down food supplies, creating food shortages, water shortages. And they're laughing at President Trump? No, they're not laughing anymore. They're, in fact, preparing to pay more into NATO if President Trump makes it through another attempt to rig another election and ends up in the White House. See, we're watching. The same people who said in the Netherlands, you're going to have to destroy whole herds of cattle, not to sell as food, but just to destroy because, of course, the weather. They're now suggesting in America, are you hearing this? Because of the avian flu, there are so-called public health officials saying we might have to kill a bunch of cattle because we think a cow got avian flu. It could cross over from cows to humans. These are the same people who have the religion of fake meat. I mentioned the limiting of the food supply. Well, in Idaho, of all places, there's an attempt to steal water from farmers and ranchers who've been for three or four generations, farmers and ranchers. Water curtailment. What's it really about? Money. These farmers and ranchers have land that borders one of the most beautiful, picturesque rivers in all of eastern Idaho. And what they want, I think, is to develop that into resorts. It's a land grab. Stephen Miller noticed this ad, this anti-Trump ad. This is something that misses Trump's appeal in an impressive way. President Trump's appeal is he's not them. He's not the people who want to engage in water curtailment, land theft through eminent domain, the bottlenecking of food supplies. And Stephen Miller's right. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with their feature called the Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
The president takes shouty questions. I understand, John. I understand. I understand. I've dealt with this question about three times already. I understand. It is...
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in today's Tower Babbling, almost always three, starting with something from good old PBS. One of the hosts there was an Obama-Biden lawyer brought on with a stern warning for Americans. Well, this could never happen. I mean, this is just paranoia. This could never happen.
There's been no evidence of President Biden weaponizing the Justice Department. What are the implications of Trump's comments to Fox News?
I think there are very serious implications because the president of the United States is the commander-in-chief, but is also the top executive for the Justice Department and has enormous power. So this is not just a kind of an idle threat.
Did you hear this? There's no evidence that President Biden is weaponizing the Justice Department. A doctor had armed agents show up at his house because he blew the whistle on Texas Children's Hospital breaking the law to continue to give wrong sex hormones and sterilization surgeries to children to inflict that upon them. But that's not weaponization. A woman who prayed at an abortion clinic is facing prison for a decade or so. She may die in prison. The judge said, good. What's your deeply held belief? I hope you live a long time in prison. After all, you're pro-life. The examples abound. We could do this for the next hour. But Laura Barron Lopez, White House reporter, and anchor Anna Nawaz on PBS, they just can't seem to see that Joe Biden's literally done what they fear President Trump is going to do, even though they say Trump has no evidence that Biden's doing it. That's why we call it the Tower Babbling. PBS is in our second clip of today's Tower Babbling. Congratulations, PBS. They brought on a mainstream TV clips to warn that Trump intends a veep to threaten democracy.
And if you pay attention to what some of these candidates for vice president are saying, they're talking about their loyalty to Trump. I want to take us through something unusual, a series of sound bites.
Will you accept the election results of 2024 no matter what happens, Senator?
No matter what happens? No, if it's an unfair election, I think it's going to
be contested by either side. Senator, no matter who wins.
I think you're asking the wrong person. The Democrats are the ones that have opposed every Republican victory since 2000. Every single one.
And they continue to play more and more clips, pretending that this is just fealty to Donald Trump. You can despise Donald Trump and still want election integrity. PBS News, making two clips of today's Tower Babbling. CBS, now, our last clip in today's Tower Babbling. CBS's Margaret Brennan got pretty confused, flummoxed, you might say, as to why Americans want to see illegal immigrants deported from the country.
Because this 62% of Americans favor deporting all undocumented immigrants. So Homeland Security says that President Biden has already deported or repatriated more people in the past year than any year since 2010. It doesn't seem practical in some sense to round up children, and federal authorities don't have the resources. So what exactly do people think they're supporting?
Well, that's a good question. What do people think they're supporting, since you actually, in your statements, in your poll, referred to them as undocumented immigrants? People who forgot their paperwork or perhaps ruined it in the laundry. No, they're people who snuck into the country illegally. And if you had honestly phrased the question, you would have gotten about 75, maybe even 80% people saying, no, if you came to the country illegally, you should be removed. Oh, by the way, going for children? That would be families. No one is about targeting children. But we also understand that children grow up and become voters in a country that is being invaded on purpose. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time. And I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
I was mentioning, I think it was yesterday, Wednesday. That during this trip to Mexico, which is part of an event for my podcast and with my partner Renew Healthcare, fantastic trip. I got to meet a lot of podcast family members and enjoy a lot of time with people, becoming friends with people who've listened to the show for all these years. It's very cool. That we were on a big catamaran in the ocean outside of Puerto Vallarta proper, seeing these incredible rocks called the Arches that jut out of the ocean. At low tide, you can take boats to them. People take kayaks to them. People swim through them. It's effectively caves. So beautiful. And I got into a conversation with a woman who turned out to be a very intelligent, really bubbly, very funny lady. And fascinating kind of background. And I mean, honestly, and I think she'd be the first to tell you that she had a few drinks. And we got into the conversation, well-intended, in public, people surrounding us, her friends there, podcast family members, their business partners there, and the topic turned to faith. Well, I think God helped me turn it to faith. And during this discussion, I simply mentioned to her, because she was saying, look, I'm a Christian. She said, I believe in Jesus, but I don't think that gay people go to hell. It's effectively what she said. And I said, okay, can we really talk about this? She said, sure. I said, no, but really, I mean, I'm not good at small talk. Really? Okay. So I said to her, as a man, I have an affection for talking with really intelligent women, and I like beautiful women as a man. Now I said, and she said, wait, Todd, we're just chatting. I said, no, I know. I'm not suggesting anything untoward's happening. I know we're just chatting. I'm just telling you transparently, talking with intelligent, beautiful women could be a problem for me mentally. And I deny myself because of the strength of the Holy Spirit. Praise God. Incidentally, I've committed many sins. Adultery is not one of them. Thank God. And I just communicated that to her to say, look, we tell people who are same-sex attracted, yes, you need to deny these things, just like we deny things. This was a way of sharing with her what I think is one of the big failings of the church, that we don't clearly communicate that adultery is no different in God's eyes than acting on same-sex attraction. So the risky thing was recognizing that, look, you are a pretty woman and you're an intelligent woman. That's a risky thing to say, perhaps. To a woman, perhaps, when you're alone, perhaps, in public, on a boat, with a bunch of people surrounding us when it's the point of the conversation? I felt it was a risk worth taking. Julie from Orlando, Florida disagrees. Dear Todd, I listened to your program on AFR and I deeply enjoy it. I was really concerned about the conversation you had with the woman on your cruise ship. Number one, as a Christian, you have no business talking privately with a woman on a cruise ship or anywhere else, certainly not on a topic like that. Number two, telling a woman that she's pretty and intelligent is an invitation to engage in something ungodly. I would advise you to take this to your pastor and to confess it to your wife. That's not a behavior of a Christian man. Perhaps it was just a lapse in thinking. I'll continue to listen to the show. I enjoy it, and I do appreciate you being honest about what you did. That's a great sign that you're willing to confess. Julie from Orlando, Florida. Julie, thank you for the note. Thank you for caring enough about me to want to hold me to account. Thank you for saying I should tell my wife. I did. When we got in the car, she picked me up at the airport. I told her. Told her about the conversation. Told her about the interaction. Because I wasn't trying to hide anything. Satan wants us to hide things. My view of this is, as that lady and I were talking, she knows she's pretty. She knows she's smart. She's aware of risks that adults have. But to take the comparison and say, we can say to same-sex attracted people, we deny ourselves too. To me, that's a moment to be able to share with them. Sometimes it's hard to deny yourself. And yet we will have eternity with nothing denied. Nothing that matters. No, not sin behaviors in heaven. That's why God's so selective. But never again a desire to sin. That's one thing that we need, is a bridge to help our same-sex attracted neighbors and friends come to redemption. Thank you for the note, Julie. I appreciate you. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. And because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations until God decides we can speak again together. May the peace of God that surpasses all understanding rest upon you and your families. On behalf of AFR and Randy, I'm Todd Herman. This has been Disciples View.